Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and the host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media, on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. 331-979-1369 is our text and voicemail line. We want that thing hopping tonight after the Bulls make their selections, after the draft is completely over. If you've got initial reaction that you want to leave us in text message form or voicemail form, whether you're angry or you're excited about who the Bulls take tonight, we want to hear all of your reaction and play that on tomorrow's episode. So 331-979-1369 is the line to hit us up at. Matt, how you doing? We are finally at the day I think we both have been waiting for since what? Since November of last year. I mean, we've been talking about this draft for months and months and months, and since the Bulls season has ended in early April, it's been nonstop. So I am so glad that today is the finally here, and we're finally going to find out who the Bulls are going to add to this core of Lauri Markkanen, Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, and even throw Bobby Portis's name in there. But I'm extremely excited. I don't know about you.
I have never been more ready for a draft to happen than I have for this one. it's felt like a lifetime. Not only the long tanking season, but really the time in between the Bulls bowing out at 27-55, and then watching the NBA playoffs. And the NBA playoffs are a nice distraction, but especially after a quick NBA finals and there's no basketball, and the Stanley Cup finals ended right around the same time, and now just like for the past couple of weeks since basketball and hockey have been over, I've just been like, all right, can we just fast forward, please, for the love of God, fast forward, because Bulls Twitter is just going insane and I can't take it anymore. So yes, I am very very excited for tonight. Sit back on the couch at home, no distractions.
Sit back, relax, and strap it down.
A six pack, hop on Twitter, and see what happens.
Well, I do have to say that this is the first time, really, that as a Bulls fan or somebody covering the team, that this team has been in full on tank mode. And I've got way more appreciation for teams out there that have had to deal with this for multiple years in a row and have had to cover this multiple years in a row, because this is excruciating. And I know Bulls fans are probably worn out with draft talk at this point, and I get it. And this is really the first time that the Bulls have done this and have not been competitive, and we've had to talk about the top players in the draft. So I look at that, and I have a little bit of sympathy for some of those teams that have been in the lottery for the last 4 or 5 years trying to figure out how to rebuild. But it's been certainly fun to talk about a lot of these prospects, and we still have really no idea what the Bulls are going to do tonight at number 7. What are the latest rumors coming out of Atlanta and Memphis that we're hearing over the last 24 hours, and whether or not the Bulls are going to move up or down?
So yeah, the latest from Atlanta is that they are definitely focusing in on Luka Doncic, assuming the Kings take Bagley with number 2. We have also, however, heard from certain people over the last 24 hours that the Atlanta Hawks also really like Trae Young. And we've heard about Atlanta maybe being interested in moving down a few spots to where they are still confident that they can get Trae Young and getting an asset or two from a team that wants to trade up to 3, because they say really want Luka Doncic, they want Luka more than the Hawks do, or that they want, they really, really want Jaren Jackson Jr. and are willing to pay for him. To me, I still think the most likely scenario is that Atlanta does take Luka Doncic at three. I mean, I think he's the best player in this draft. I really do. And if the Suns and the Kings are going to play it safe with the bigs, it seems like a foolish missed opportunity for Atlanta to not take Luka. I mean, and if the player that they're second highest on is Trae Young, are you really going to take Trae Young instead of Luka Doncic? To me, that makes no sense. And then, of course, it goes to Memphis, where, you know, Jordan, there's always been talk over the last few days about maybe them trying to trade down and notably doing so while getting rid of Chandler Parsons' contract. I don't think the Bulls want to take on that Parsons contract. If Luka and or Jaren Jackson is there at four, I think it would certainly be worth a phone call to see what it would cost, but I don't think the Bulls want to take on that Parsons contract.
Yeah, and I look at Orlando, too, who's been interested in Trae Young, too, at number seven, and obviously Luka Doncic would be somebody that they ought also be interested at number three, so to me, I think you have to look at the Orlando Magic and see what they're going to do as well, because if they're looking at Trae, if Atlanta's looking at Trae Young, which I said yesterday, too, I think that would be a pretty good reason for why Atlanta would want to move down. I don't know what Orlando has to trade and to offer at number three to take Luka Doncic there, but should they do that, I think it's going to depend a lot on what Dallas decides to do as far as their big men. If the Bulls don't decide to deal and say Orlando moves up to number three, I think it's going to be interesting to see what not only Memphis does, but what Dallas does as well, and see what slides down to number seven for the Bulls. As I look over this draft more and more, and I look over what it would cost the Bulls in order to move up to number four, I think you're right, too. If you're talking about money, and basically the Parsons contract is wasting money for the Bulls organization. Now, to you and I, it's not a waste, or to any fans out there that want to add assets and figure, who cares, we're so far under the cap already. But history tells us that money is more important to this organization at times than winning is. So to me, I think you're right about that Parsons contract, that that's going to cause a wedge in whether or not the Bulls actually try to move up. And it also depends, too, how high they are on some of these guys in the top five. Is it worth them to move up to grab Mo Bamba or to grab Jaren Jackson Jr. at number four if they're available? Maybe it's more worth it if Luka Doncic falls all the way past three and he's available there at number four. Then maybe they say, all right, this is a once in generational type of talent. We move up there at number four. If they're looking to take Mo Bamba, which you and I both know that I'm infatuated with Mo Bamba, and pairing him against next to Lauri Markkanen would be fantastic. I don't know if the Parsons contract is worth it to move up to get him, especially if Wendell Carter Jr. is going to be available at number seven, or if they're quote unquote really high as far as ownership goes on Michael Porter Jr. If he's going to be there at number seven, I don't think. If Michael Porter Jr. is still available and they see him falling all the way to seven, or Wendell Carter Jr. at the same spot, to me, it looks like it's more likely that they just wait at number seven and see what they can do. And to me, if they wait at number seven and they take a guy like Wendell Carter Jr. or Michael Porter Jr., I would hope they're making multiple phone calls to try to get back into the back half of that lottery and maybe take a wing player there, or somebody that they've worked out before, Lonnie Walker, Robert Williams, another center that they could potentially take from Texas A&M, any of those guys. But I'd like to see them, if they do stand pat at number seven tonight, to try at least to move up to the back half of the lottery, either the Clippers pick or that Denver pick, or somewhere in the middle of the teens.
I mean, I think it's probably more, I guess I would say more likely than the Bulls moving up from seven. And especially if they really, really like a wing that's somewhere projected to go in the 10 to 13 range, like you're talking about. One other scenario that we should also mention, just because it's out there, and this was from Jonathan Givony's last, most recent mock for Draft Express and ESPN.com. It came out at 10:02 this morning, and here we are recording this at 10:45, saying NBA teams expect Dallas to take Bamba if they stay at five. Sources say they've also had conversations with Chicago about sliding back to seven, possibly to take Michael Porter Jr., who is reportedly a favorite of ownership. So the Dallas Mavericks still interested in Michael Porter Jr. and apparently have at least engaged in preliminary talks with the Bulls about swapping five and seven, assuming that Dallas moves down two spots to take Porter Jr. at seven. If that is an accurate report, it likely means that they are having those conversations knowing that the Bulls are not, in fact, interested in Michael Porter Jr. and would want to trade up to five to take, most likely, Mo Bamba if he's on the board.
What do you think it would take to move up two spots to go to Dallas? Like, what does Dallas have to have from the Bulls in order to move up two spots if, in fact, the Bulls want to take Mo Bamba over Michael Porter Jr.? Can you think of anything in a scenario? Would the Bulls have to give up their 22nd pick in order to make this deal happen? Are they going to have to add Bobby Portis to a deal? Do you think Denzel Valentine would have to be a part of a deal, Robin Lopez or Justin Holiday being a part of a deal, anything of those scenarios to move up just two spots?
I mean, they might be interested in getting one of the players on the Bulls roster. I think that they would almost certainly want that 22 pick included in there as well. Maybe they want to get off Harrison Barnes' contract, which is pretty friggin' gross. I don't see the Bulls taking on that. You know, his contract is 4 years, $94 million. And of that, he's got two remaining years at 24 and 25. I mean, that's a disgusting contract. So I don't think the Bulls are going to do anything to get rid of that. Wesley Matthews also is on a pretty big contract for Dallas right now. Let's check this out. Wesley Matthews, he's on the final year at $18 million. So that might be, if the Mavs are trying to get rid of it and get it off the books to try and create some cap space, the Bulls might be willing to take on a one remaining year bad deal like that. So taking on a bad contract, including the 22nd pick, maybe Dallas is kind of interested in somebody the Bulls have. Those are hypotheticals that would probably be in play if those conversations are happening right now between Dallas and Chicago.
Going to be very interesting. We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls, but when we come back, we're going to give you guys our final predictions for 1 through 7 picks, whether or not the Bulls decide to trade up, and who they would ultimately take at number 7. So we give those to you guys, as well as a look back at the last 15 years of the Bulls draft. Matt and I are both going to grade each individual pick, starting at 2003 and moving all the way up to 2017 for the Bulls, just to give you an idea of what the history has looked like over the last 15 years or so, and whether or not we feel like the Bulls have graded better in most drafts or worse in most drafts. So stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. We'll be back in 60 seconds. All right, Matt, let's make our final predictions here on Locked On Bulls. For the first 7 picks of the draft, that's where really things start to tail off after the number 6 pick or number 7, and wild cards could be thrown in there as well. But I want to get your thoughts on 1 through 7. So let's start with the Phoenix Suns. Phoenix Suns are going to select who at number 1? I'm going with DeAndre Ayton. I think that's pretty much a open and closed case here. DeAndre Ayton, the connection with him living in Phoenix, playing at Arizona, I think it all makes sense. His mom living there as well. He seems infatuated with playing there and being able to play alongside Devin Booker and some of these other young assets that they have there. I'm taking DeAndre Ayton going number 1, and I'm pretty confident about that.
Same.
And at number 2, who are the Sacramento Kings going to take? Is it going to be Marvin Bagley? Is it going to be Michael Porter Jr. or Luka Doncic?
I think they're going to play it safe and go with Bagley. That's most of what I've been hearing over the last 24 hours. And some people are talking about, wouldn't it be like the greatest long con ever if Sacramento actually does really want Luka? And after all this talk about it's going to be Bagley, or maybe they'll take a chance on Porter Jr., they actually do take Luka Doncic. I don't think the Kings are that sneaky and that creative. We know this Kings front office between Vlade and Vivek Ranadive. Like, I don't see it. I think they're going to take Bagley because I think they see him as a safe pick.
It's such a Kings move for them to draft another center. So I think I'm in line with you there. Imagine the chaos that could happen if they do take Luka Doncic at number 2, though, because then Atlanta, they would probably be in a panic to move down if they want to really take Trae Young at 6 or 7. You look at Memphis as well, who might be interested there, or they take Jaren Jackson Jr. Atlanta does at number 3. I think you're right, though. the connections with Marvin Bagley, he seems like really the only prospect in the top five that seems interested in going to Sacramento. And I know you said you don't carry a lot of weight of where players really want to play or their interest of that, but I think that's a small factor in Sacramento keeping around players and being able to draw in stars is a guy that actually wants to stay there outside of his rookie contract. So I think the Marvin Bagley fit makes sense going next to Scal Labissiere and also Willie Cauley-Stein. I think that could make for a really nice mesh. There's still some outside consideration that Michael Porter Jr. might be taken by the Kings. I feel confident that that's probably not going to happen. So I'm with you too. I think Marvin Bagley's the selection at number two. So let's switch over to Atlanta now. So Marvin Bagley's off the board and DeAndre Ayton's off the board. What do you think Atlanta does here at number three, and who do they decide to take?
I think Atlanta takes Luka. I think they do. From what I've heard and just the fact that I think they'll... they decided to give up on Jeff Teague in favor of Dennis Schroeder, and I really don't think that they've been really that great and that enthused about the results of making Schroeder their go-to guy and their go-to playmaker. I think that they are going to look at Luka and say, this guy can be our main facilitator and our main playmaker as we're going through this rebuild, and he's too good to pass up at number three. I think they're going to take Luka.
I think if they do stay at number three and he's available, I think you're right, too. You looked at Dennis Schroeder, who was supposed to be part of this rebuild and one of their core pieces. I think him on top of John Collins as well, being in Atlanta, this might convince Dennis Schroeder not to ask for a trade anymore. I know we heard that early on at the end of the season that Dennis Schroeder pretty much wanted out, that he was looking for a trade, that he didn't want to tank anymore, didn't want to be a part of a losing organization. I think if you bring a guy in like Luka Doncic at number three, that might convince Dennis Schroeder to stay around and see what they can do together. I think you're right there at number three, that Atlanta's going to take Luka Doncic should he be available. And this is assuming that they don't move back and try to take Trae Young at number six or number seven. So that leaves us at Memphis. Memphis has got an interesting pick and an interesting decision here. Either Jaren Jackson Jr., Mo Bamba, Wendell Carter Jr., Michael Porter Jr. could be in play at number four as well.
I mean,
who are you thinking Memphis takes here?
Even for all of the talk saying, well, Memphis isn't really that high on Jaren Jackson Jr., and Jaren Jackson Jr. hasn't shared his medicals with Memphis. I mean, I'm seeing two possibilities here, and it's that Memphis does find a trade partner and trades down a few spots because they don't love anybody who's on the board at four, or they suck it up and realize that everybody else around them is talking about the fact that Jaren Jackson Jr., right there with Luka, might actually be the best player in this draft, might, fast forward 10 years, be the most productive player out of this draft class, and take the kid. Everybody's talking about, you know, sneakily, you know, DeAndre Ayton is the consensus number one overall. More and more people are talking about the fact that Jaren Jackson Jr. might actually end up being the best player in this draft class. There's a reason people are talking about that. If I'm Memphis, I don't know what the problem is. And if the kid didn't share his medicals with us because he's not really keen on playing, I don't care. I think at four, he is the best value on the board, and that's who you should take. So if I'm Memphis and Jaren Jackson, and it's Ayton, Bagley, Doncic, 1, 2, 3, I'm absolutely taking Jaren Jackson Jr.
Yeah, I think the discussion's going to go back and forth with him and Mo Bamba, and whether or not who really fits in today's NBA, and especially with that Memphis Grizzlies team, they're still going to try and be competitive. I mean, you still got Mike Conley locked up. Obviously, Marcus Gasol's not getting any younger, so there is some level of competition that I think the Memphis Grizzlies are going to try and be a part of next year, whether or not that actually happens. The only other player that I saw going at number four, but he went at number two to the Kings, was Marvin Bagley. I felt Marvin Bagley was sort of the fit for Memphis at number four, should he slide all the way down there. So that would be the only other player that I could see Memphis being interested in taking outside of Mo Bamba or Jaren Jackson Jr., but I think you're right, Jaren Jackson Jr. going at number four. So then that brings us to Dallas. Dallas has got an interesting decision too, and I don't want to take anything away from what they've said about Michael Porter Jr. over the last couple of weeks, because I still think Dallas has an intrigue in Michael Porter Jr. at number five. I know there's been connections with Mo Bamba, and we said that should the Dallas Mavericks stay there at number five, that they're going to take Bamba, but I wouldn't leave out the possibility that Dallas takes Michael Porter Jr. there at number five as well. I think if Dallas stays the same and Orlando stays where they're at and Chicago does too at number seven, I'm probably saying that Dallas is going to go with Mo Bamba just because they've been desperate on swinging and missing on potential superstar big men. You look at DeAndre Jordan and Dwight Howard all the way back a couple of years ago. They swung and missed on both of those guys. So this is their clear opportunity to be able to develop a potential young superstar center that they've been looking for a long time. So I think I'm going with Mo Bamba at number five.
Me too. I think you're right. It's going to be Bamba or Michael Porter Jr., assuming Porter Jr. doesn't go two to the Kings. And I think it's more likely, I put it at like 75-25 in favor of Bamba over Michael Porter Jr. with Dallas. So that's going to be my official pick for the Mavs at five.
All right, let's go to Orlando at number six, because I think this is where it gets a little bit weird. So if Michael Porter Jr. is still available on the board at number six, Trae Young is still there at number six, Wendell Carter Jr. is available too. I think Orlando has a tough decision at six. Do you take the risk on Trae Young as your future point guard? Do you take the possibility of taking Michael Porter Jr. and having another athletic wing too? And the one thing about Michael Porter Jr. that I want to throw out there for you too, Matt, and for some of our listeners, is I've heard that there's teams that are willing to take him and then just completely shut him down for the first year. Like similar to what the 76ers did to Joel Embiid, try to get his body right. They said he's sort of weak, and I think throwing him out there in the first rookie season would be doing him a disservice. So maybe trying to get his body right in year one. So if the Orlando Magic are willing to tank for another year and take Michael Porter Jr. and sit him out for the entire season, I think they could find their point guard next year's draft. So that's an interesting move there. Wendell Carter Jr., obviously Orlando likes their big men too, so Wendell Carter Jr. could be a fit there in Orlando. I think if I'm going between those three guys, I'm probably going to say that Trae Young's probably going to go to Orlando, all the connections that have been there. So if I had to pick between all three of those guys, and I feel like it's pretty split down the middle, I would say 45% at Trae Young, 35% Wendell Carter Jr., and the rest goes to Michael Porter Jr. at number six.
Yeah, just to touch on the MPJ to Orlando hypothetical real quick and what you were just talking about with him and his medical situation, that would, to me, be the one silver lining and the one positive spin as far as what I would hope would happen if the Bulls actually do take a chance on MPJ and take him at seven. Because I don't want them to take Porter. You know all the reasons why. If they do take Porter, I would not at all be opposed. I would very much be in favor of the Bulls sitting him out and redshirting his rookie year, because it would likely mean that the Bulls would once again be a lottery team coming into the 2019 draft. Maybe not one of the top tier lottery teams, but hey, those lottery odds are getting more evenly dispersed starting in 2019. So that's fine. It would be tough to endure another season of losing and losing on purpose when you want to get excited about this young core, specifically having, you know, who knows what we might see from Markkanen in his second season. But that's the only positive. That's the only silver lining to me if the Bulls take Porter. Shut him down his rookie year and get yourself another lottery pick in 2019. From Orlando's perspective, God, I hope they take Trae Young. Like, my worst nightmare scenario is that 1 through 5 have gone like we have said they've gone, which seems to be a pretty common consensus right now across all NBA landscapes. And then Orlando's choices are take the chance on Porter Jr., take the chance on Trae Young, or take Wendell Carter Jr. And my deepest fear today is that they take Wendell Carter Jr. and the Bulls are forced to choose between Michael Porter Jr. and Trae Young. That is my biggest, deepest, oh my God, please don't let that happen fear. So for the purpose of trying to look on the bright side, I will say that Orlando does take a chance on the point guard that they desperately need after the Elfrid Payton failed experiment, and they take Trae Young at six.
I think I'm with you too. Everything that we've heard so far, I think Trae Young's going to go to Orlando. They're going to try to figure it out with Jonathan Isaac and bringing Aaron Gordon back. And it's a pretty decent core on paper if you think about a young core under 25. So I think I'm with you there. Orlando desperately needs a point guard, and I don't see them signing anybody in free agency or anything that would be worth it for them.
We have heard, though, that we should mention Trae Young's been slipping on a lot of draft boards in the last 24 hours, like slipping out of the top 10, which is horrifying. In my eyes, as a Bulls fan who doesn't want anything to do with him, that's pretty horrifying, because it means that there will be fewer players that I like for the Bulls to choose from at seven.
Any scenario where if Trae Young drops out of the top 10, the Bulls panic and try to move up to that back half of the lottery, 11 through 14, to take Trae Young? What if there's a scenario where the Bulls take Michael Porter Jr. at number 7 and then Trae Young slips all the way out of the top 10 and they try to move up and take Trae Young on top of that? What would you say to that?
I would say that I haven't had enough coffee yet today to even contemplate how mad I would be at that happening.
But I think going back to your point about Michael Porter Jr. and shutting him down, if the Bulls do take him at number 7, which we're at right now, you're between Michael Porter Jr., Wendell Carter Jr. here at this pick, Mikal Bridges, Miles Bridges, Kevin Knox. You've got a decision to make on whether you want to play it a little bit safe or roll the dice and gamble a little bit. I think if Michael Porter Jr. is there at number 7, I'm convinced that I think the Bulls are going to take him there. Like I said, I think Wendell Carter Jr. would be a phenomenal pick, and I like everything about that guy's game. But if we're talking about mere what the Bulls are going to decide to do rather than what you and I think they should do, I think Michael Porter Jr. is probably going to go there at number 7 if he slides all the way down there. And I think that's the move that the Bulls need to make if they take him, is shut him down for the entire year, get his body right, get him acclimated to how to work in the NBA. And obviously you might get a little pushback from him. How about the confidence in Michael Porter Jr. real quick too, because we didn't touch on this yesterday. He said he was a combination of Kevin Durant, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Tracy McGrady. That's yeah. The ultimate confidence. I think that's the most confident statement I've ever heard from a draft prospect who's never even played a game in college.
I think it's absolutely ludicrous. If you want to call it confidence, that's fine. I think it's ridiculous.
Oh, man. Two of the top 10 players in the NBA right now, and then a guy that was a potential Hall of Famer in Tracy McGrady, and the way that he was able to play, I think is just kind of ridiculous. But that's the confidence level that this guy has. And hey, I'm not going to knock him totally for it, but you got a lot of haters and a lot of people who are doubting you to back these statements up. So I think that only adds a ton of pressure to Michael Porter Jr. in his first and second year coming into the NBA. But I think you're right. If the Bulls take him at number 7, they should completely shut him down and let him get his body right and acclimated to the NBA and then be a lottery team again next season.
Yeah, I mean, this is tough. Assuming that 1 through 6 shake out the way that we have them here, you're right. Right now, the choice the Bulls are sitting at on the clock is Michael Porter Jr., high risk, high reward, and Wendell Carter Jr., probably the highest floor of any player in this draft. They know what they can get from him, and he might not be a flashy player, but he's, you know, right there alongside Jaren Jackson Jr., probably the highest floor defensively versatile big in this draft. And the Bulls really need that. And I think he would do wonders paired next to Lauri Markkanen in the Bulls front court. And look, the Bulls front office over the last, you know, half a decade have gotten just slammed by the fans for playing it safe when it comes to the draft. And this is an instance where I would rather they lean towards playing it safe. Everything we've heard and seen about Wendell Carter Jr., I really like. And everything we have heard and seen about Michael Porter Jr. is putting alarm bells off in my head like crazy. I don't like the way the kid carries himself. I don't like the back surgery. I don't like the hip spasms. There's a lot about him that I don't like. I don't like his fit on this Bulls roster. I think he has tunnel vision on the court. I don't know if his high school start skills are going to translate, because we only saw him in 2 games in college when he wasn't even playing at 100%. Everything about him scares me. So in this instance, for all of the times the Bulls fan base has gotten so mad at the front office for playing it safe in the draft, I want them to play it safe in the draft and take Wendell Carter Jr.
Interesting, because I have a little bit of a different perspective, and it's not necessarily because of Michael Porter Jr. I'd rather them take the gamble. If they feel like that Michael Porter Jr., Trae Young, Mo Bamba, Jaren Jackson Jr., if you move up, are going to be that quintessential franchise-changing player, and that's a must-have for the Bulls. If that's the top guy, one of those top guys on their draft board, I'd rather see them take the risk and take the gamble, sort of like they did on Lauri Markkanen at number 7. And while that might be a different situation as far as comparing him to what Michael Porter Jr.'s draft stock is or Trae Young's, I would rather them take the risk. And that's, to me, I can sit here and say if one of those guys busts out in 2, 3, 4 years, that I wouldn't kill the front office if he ended up busting and that's the way it went. Because at least then that tells me that they're willing to take a gamble and they're willing to take a risk to try and win and try to obtain that franchise-changing player instead of keeping the norm and going with what history has told us time and time again. So to me, I'd rather see them take the gamble and the risk, and I don't know who that would be on their board that they would be willing to do that, but I'd rather see them take the gamble.
To me, it's silly to say that only taking the risk in Michael Porter Jr. is equivalent to them deciding that they want to win. Wendell Carter Jr. would absolutely, you put him in there, he's a bit of a project, but hell, at this point, so is Michael Porter Jr., and he's a project with an injury. Wendell Carter Jr. makes this team better. It's not like Michael Porter Jr. and taking the risk is the only way that the Bulls can add wins in this draft. That, to me, that's like a silly argument.
No,
to make.
I agree with you. I think Wendell Carter Jr. can be a very productive player in the NBA and be a borderline all-star type of player, like the way Al Horford is. But is he a franchise-changing talent? Do you feel like his ceiling says franchise-changing talent?
If he reaches his ceiling and his ceiling is Al Horford, then abso-friggin-lutely he's a franchise-changing talent.
Okay, I can see that too. So, to me, I like Wendell Carter Jr. as well. So I don't know. Whoever the Bulls decide to take here, I'd rather see them take a gamble on a guy that they're really high on. And if Wendell Carter Jr. is that guy, then great. I like his pairing against it next to Lauri Markkanen, and the character of Wendell Carter Jr. and the intelligence and the basketball IQ and everything that goes into his game. I get it. I think he can be a phenomenal player, and people knock him because of his Duke stats and saying, oh, he was overshadowed by Marvin Bagley, which I think is a fair statement to make. You think about all the guys on Duke's team, and this is why I think people who are arguing against taking Wendell Carter Jr., saying that he's trash, I don't think are very informed about what he was doing on that Duke team.
No, and when you look back to the time of their season when Bagley was out with an injury and Carter Jr.'s minutes went up, I can't remember which person over at The Ringer, it might have been Kevin O'Connor, did a column earlier this week about how actually, like, if you look at Wendell Carter's stats, especially when he was the guy while Bagley was sitting and resting his injury, Wendell Carter Jr. might actually turn out to be the better of the two Duke big men that are in this draft. Like, that possibility is absolutely on the table. Bagley was the one who had the monster stats across the season and was, you know, putting up 20 and 20 games and things like that because he was, when healthy, the one that they went to and had all the minutes and had most of the touches. But go back and look at some of those games that Wendell Carter Jr. played when Bagley was sitting. I mean, it's not crazy to think that Wendell Carter Jr. can be just as good, if not better, than Bagley in the NBA.
Yeah, Matt, to your point, he missed four games towards the back half of the season for Duke, and that gave Wendell Carter Jr. an opportunity to play a little bit longer. And you look at the four games that Marvin Bagley did miss in the regular season, Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech, Clemson, and Louisville. In those games, respectively, Wendell Carter Jr. had 19 points, 10 rebounds, and 4 blocks. 13 points, 13 rebounds, 2 blocks. 15 points, 10 rebounds, and 3 blocks. And then he had 18 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists, and 3 blocks against Louisville. And then once Marvin Bagley came back, he did the same thing, 16, 10, 4, 4, and 2. So to your point, I mean, man, you're right.
That's what I'm saying, dude. So WCJ, baby, he's got some legit potential in the NBA.
So I'm totally cool if the Bulls take Wendell Carter Jr. at number 7 and pass on Michael Porter.
But you would still prefer them take the chance on
Yeah,
Porter.
I would rather than... If the case goes to the Bulls are willing to take him and then shut him down for a year, then I'm all in. I'm all in. But if it's a decision between Trae Young and Wendell Carter Jr., no thanks. I'm taking Wendell Carter Jr. every day of the week, especially on Sundays.
All right. So we're pretty much right in sync here about how we think 1 through 7 is going to go. And we're just a little bit split on if it is between Porter Jr. and Carter Jr. at 7. I'm going Carter, you're going Porter.
Yes, sir. So that's right, rounds up our top 7 and where we think guys are going to fall in tonight's draft. Obviously, many things can change leading up to draft night. But we're going to take another short break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, we're going to round out the show by talking about the last 15 years of the draft for the Chicago Bulls, and we're going to grade each draft pick and overall our best grade out of 15 years and see what happens there. So stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media, on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck, and on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls. Stay up to date with everything Chicago Bulls at LockedOnBulls.com and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts.
All right, Matt, we're back here on Locked On Bulls, and we're going to go through all of the draft picks leading up to the 2017 draft, going all the way back to 2003. And so Matt and I are just going to go back and forth about each draft pick that was taken in each year, respectively, by the Chicago Bulls, and grade them between an A-plus draft or an F as far as this draft pick goes. And hopefully we can come to some consensus of overall what their grade is, A through F, over the last 15 years. And this includes Gar Forman still being a part of the organization and John Paxson as well, and these guys having decision-making skills as far back as 2003. So let's start there, Matt. This is a draft that I feel like can be compared a lot to this year and whether or not the Bulls liked somebody. So the Bulls at number 7 in 2003 took Kirk Heinrich. They really liked Dwayne Wade. This was all the talk about how they wish they would have traded up to grab Dwayne Wade. Instead, they stood pat, and Dwayne Wade ended up going to the Miami Heat, and then Kirk Heinrich fell to the Bulls at number 7. What would you grade this draft in 2003 as, A through F?
I'm giving Kirk a B+. You think about all of the years that he was just a staple for that Bull, for the baby Bulls years. A guy who maybe wasn't the flashiest scorer on the court, but definitely a gifted passer, a smart point guard who was pretty good with, you know, keeping the turnovers to a minimum and just finding the other guys on the court who could score more effectively than he could, and in his own right had some elements to his game. He could knock down the three ball, he could break somebody down off the dribble and get to the paint when he wanted to when he was young. And the defensive, you know, what he brought to the Bulls defensively, probably one of the better defensive point guards this Bulls team has seen in the last 15 years. I'm giving it a solid B+.
Fair. I think I'm going to go with a B just because they decided not to move up to take Dwayne Wade after they were in love with him. So that's the only reason why I would give them a B.
I mean, decided not to or couldn't?
That could be tossed up for debate. I think I'm only going to give him a B just because of that. That's more so the front office. But you're right, he was a staple for however long, 10 years with the Bulls, and so that pick wasn't terrible, and so I'm going to give it a B. You gave it a B+. Let's go to 2004. Ben Gordon at number 3 and Luol Deng at number 7. This came after the Bulls purchased the Suns pick at number 7, and then they gave away their number 1 pick their first round pick, I should say, in 2005 to the Suns. So what do you think of Ben Gordon and Luol Deng as a combo pair here in the lottery?
Collectively, I give that an A. I mean, you talk about Ben Gordon being the first guy ever to win Sixth Man of the Year as a rookie and how much he meant to those baby Bulls and, you know, doing big things for them in playoff games. And then Luol Deng, right there alongside Kirk Heinrich, one of the staples of this Bulls team, all the way through from the baby Bulls and the Scott Skiles years to through the Vinny years and the Tibbs years. Luol Deng, a glue guy, constantly referred to as a glue guy by Tom Thibodeau. A workhorse, an iron man, versatile 3-and-D wing, behind Derrick Rose, probably the second most reliable scorer on some of the best Bulls teams we've seen in the post-Jordan years. Collectively, Gordon and Deng together, getting those two in the same draft, that's an A to me. Simple.
I think I'm with you too. An A is definitely worthy here at 3-7. Even though they had to give up their first round pick in 2005, it was more of a matter of trying to grab guys that were going to be glue pieces for this Bulls team in the future. And I think Deng was a phenomenal pick. And Ben Gordon, for as much criticism as he got going into the draft and saying he was an undersized guard, that there's no way he was going to be able to shoot in this league and be able to defend, Ben Gordon had a really, really, really good career with the Bulls. So I would give it an A too. And let's not forget the Bulls grabbed Chris Duhon too in the second round there. He obviously flamed out and didn't turn out to be the player that maybe the Bulls thought. But overall, I'm giving that an A. 2005, obviously got to give the Bulls an F here because they didn't have a draft pick in 2005.
What? You can't give them an F. You give them an NA. Not applicable.
Oh, okay. All right. I guess.
You can't give them an F for not having a
pick.
Why
not, though?
If you're saying, well, I think it was worth it for them to add that additional first rounder in 2004, then you can't give them an F for not having a pick in 2005. That's ludicrous.
It's okay. True. Yeah, all right. Fine. I'll give you that. And especially because the Bulls pick fell all the way to number 21 in 2005, that first round pick. So, all right. You're right. I'll be fair.
Yeah, come on now. Like, look, you know, we all know I like to play devil's advocate on this show when the front office actually does deserve being defended, and you can't give them an F for a pick that's not there.
All right, let's go to 2006. This is a...
Now we can give them an F. Now that we've gotten to 2006, we can give them an F.
This is one that a lot of sports writers here in Chicago that might not be in tune with what the NBA is doing currently, they love to go back to this draft of whether or not to choose between Tyrus Thomas or LaMarcus Aldridge. So the Bulls decided to move down and take Tyrus Thomas. Actually, it was sort of just a flip. LaMarcus Aldridge went at number 2, Tyrus Thomas at number 4. And then they got Thabo Sefolosha in number 13 in this draft. What do you think overall of this, outside of the Tyrus Thomas pick to the Thabo Sefolosha pick too as well?
I mean, Sefolosha had himself some interesting and not totally useless years. But I didn't even take that into consideration when giving them this grade, and it's simple. It's an F. You can't swap Tyrus Thomas instead of LaMarcus Aldridge, look at the careers that they had, and give it anything other than an F. It's that simple.
Yep, I am totally with you. I'm not even going to discuss this pick because it was a time that the Bulls took a risk, and it didn't work out at all and ended up hurting them because... Think about if LaMarcus Aldridge was a part of that team. And the one thing I will say, the silver lining here is being able to grab Joakim Noah at number 9, and that brings us to 2007. Joakim Noah coming out of college at Florida, winning back-to-back championships there. The Bulls selected this guy, and there was a lot of talk. I remember at first, a lot of Bulls fans did not like this selection. They were pissed that the Bulls took Joakim Noah here, didn't think he was going to turn out to be anything. Ended up being one of the staples of those Bulls teams in the early 2010s when they were going up against Miami. I love this pick, and I love Joakim Noah the entire time, so I'm giving them an A in 2007.
Also A. I mean, you can't refute it. An all-star, a defensive player of the year winner, and undeniably, for all of the points that Derrick Rose scored, the heart and soul of the best Bulls team we've seen in the post-Jordan years. Unquestionably the heart and soul of the team and the anchor of the defense. One of the best defenses in the league for like 4 or 5 straight seasons. That's an A right there.
Now we get to 2008. This is since 2008, this year in 2018, is the first time the Bulls actually have their own pick in the lottery. The last time they did that, they took Derrick Rose. Obviously, I'm giving it an A+. The injuries were unfortunate for Derrick Rose's career. We all know that. But as far as a pick between him and Michael Beasley at 1 or 2, the Bulls made the right choice, took their hometown kid in Derrick Rose. So I'm giving this an A+.
I'm giving it just a regular A. I don't think they really get the plus for choosing Rose over Beasley. To me, it was kind of a no-brainer. I know that there was some contention and debate coming into that draft about who should go 1 and who should go 2 between Rose and Michael Beasley. To me, it was always clear. It was Derrick Rose. Like, obvious. Not just because he was a Chicago kid, but because I thought he was better and was going to be better in the NBA than Beasley. And if Rose never gets hurt, obviously that was the case by far. So, yeah, they did a good job. They didn't screw it up. I'll give him a... You know, it's like getting an A in home ec. It's like, it's not a great A. It's not an A you should be proud of, but they didn't screw it up. So they get an A. An A+, I think that's a bit much.
2009, James Johnson going at number 16 and Taj Gibson at number 26. I think the combination of those two guys, the one thing about James Johnson is they gave up on him pretty early. And now you see he's still in uniform in the NBA being productive. I think the last time we saw him was in the Miami Heat. And then obviously Taj Gibson.
Yeah, nice resurgence to his career over the last season.
And then
you
got Taj Gibson too at number 26, which ended up being the absolute steal. At number 26, the Bulls are really good at picking at the back 20s of the first round in this draft. I'm going to give this probably a B+, just because they gave up on James Johnson a little bit early. Taj Gibson makes up for that, though, so I'm probably borderline B+, A- with this draft, just because of the impact that Taj Gibson had on this team in between 2010 and 2015.
Yeah, so unlike the Gordon/Deng 04 year, where I just gave them an A across the board, I gave them different grades here. For James Johnson, I gave him a D because, as you said, he didn't pan out for them and they gave up on him. And turns out he's actually a pretty good NBA player, you know, 9 years later, however far back it's gone now. And Taj is an A+. They got Taj Gibson at 26 and probably their most consistent bench guy over the run of some very successful winning seasons. nobody thought that Taj was going to turn into anything on the offensive end, just a workhorse on the defensive end. But he put in the work and he developed himself offensively, developed a decent mid-range game, worked on his post moves, and probably consensus, no matter whose side of what power struggle you were on in the Bulls locker room in the Derrick Rose and Joakim and Jimmy Butler years, nobody in that locker room and nobody in the media and no fan ever has had anything but glowing remarks to say about the person that Taj Gibson is. And that remains true to this day now that he's moved on to Minnesota. One of the nicest guys in the NBA, says everybody in the NBA. That's an A-plus pick. So if you want to combine them, A-plus for Taj, D for James Johnson. I don't know, what does that average out to? About, you know, a B?
So that's good. That's fair. And just another point here is the Bulls obtained Taj Gibson's pick actually from turning around and trading Tabo Cephalosha to Denver for their first-round pick. So the Bulls got back into this draft after trading him and taking James Johnson at number 16. They got back at number 26 and were able to take Taj Gibson, who were the better of the two. So I'm right there with you. A-plus for Taj Gibson. We could argue a little bit about James Johnson, but it's honestly not even worth it. So I'm giving them a borderline B plus A minus here just because they grabbed Taj Gibson. They were willing to give up on their number 13th pick just 3 years ago in order to obtain that pick, and it ended up being a better player overall than Tabo Cephalosha was. So now we get to 2010. They traded and swapped their first round picks from the John Salmons trade from the Bucks. So the Bulls didn't end up with a draft pick in 2010. We'll kind of skip over that, make that an NA as well. And then we get to 2011. This is an interesting draft, and I think this is where the Bulls hit on two guys, and we can argue with Nico Mirotic going at number 23 and Jimmy Butler going at number 30. I think overall 2011, I've got to give the Bulls an A. Both players have turned out to be productive players, and Jimmy Butler turned into a star. So anytime you get a player at the last pick in the first round, I think it is well deserving of an A and maybe even arguably an A+.
Yeah. I mean, in recent years, I don't know if there's an example better than Jimmy Butler. Maybe you can say Isaiah Thomas going all the way at the very end of round two, who turned himself into a star in his own right. But he's, you know, who knows if that was just a briefly shining star, kind of like Rose, with all of the injuries that he's been going through and getting traded multiple times this season. And then also probably Draymond as a second round guy. Outside of those two players, is there anybody who's a bigger draft steal than Jimmy Butler over the last 8 or 9 years? Because I don't see it. Donovan Mitchell this year, but not by that many picks. It's not like he fell to the back end of the first round. The Bulls getting Jimmy Butler, a superstar player at 30. That's an A right there. Simple.
I think the one player that I can say that maybe was more of a steal than Jimmy Butler was Draymond Green in the second round. That was probably the only other one.
Yeah.
In the last 10 years?
So, yeah, I mentioned Draymond, I mentioned Isaiah Thomas. Probably those three guys are the biggest steals in the last 10
maybe,
years.
And maybe you could even throw Nikola Jokic in there, too, as well. He went in the back half or the middle of the second round as well.
Okay, yeah, sure.
So any of those guys...
But a better player than Jimmy?
Yeah,
right now?
I don't know. I've probably taken Jimmy over any of those guys anyway. So, grade for 2011, what are you giving them?
A, simple.
Good stuff. So I think we can agree there that that draft was an A. Just one other key note about 2011 is actually the Bulls decided to move up to number 23 to take Nikola Mirotic, and that number 28 pick ended up being Norris Cole. So Norris Cole was a good fit for the Miami Heat for those times in that run, but his career kind of tailed off, and Mirotic is actually turning out to be a productive player in this league now, and we'll see what he does in a full season with the Pelicans, and I think that's a great fit for him. But to nab a draft pick that turned around in pretty much the same level of pick that you got when you moved up for Mirotic at number 23, you netted a number 22 pick in this year's draft, so I think that was a good value for the Bulls there and what it ended up being. 2012, I think we can all agree that
here's
this was
F.
An F.
Here's another F. Marquise Teague, F. Next. Moving on. Let's not talk about this.
The only thing I want to say about Marquise Teague is that the Bulls never even worked him out. That was the one thing that I think absolutely killed me here, is that at number 29, the Bulls drafted a guy that they never even worked out. And I know you can say the same thing about Lauri Markkanen, but they scouted him all year. to not bring a guy in and then take him in the first round in Marquise Teague, I think was just terrible. That's
and the kicker is that it's common knowledge that Tom Thibodeau wanted them to take Draymond and they didn't. And look what Draymond is.
So with that, they get an F in the 2012 draft. Now we go on to 2013. We're getting a little bit more familiar for those fans that might be of the younger generation out there. 2013, they took Tony Snell at number 20. What are you giving them here?
C minus. I think that the Bulls weren't wrong in thinking that Tony Snell could be a decent player in the NBA, and he definitely seemed to have, at least at the onset, found himself a niche in a nicer home when they swapped him to the Milwaukee Bucks. But it's just, you know, he never really played with any amount of confidence when he was with the Bulls for a couple of years, and he just, you know, he didn't pan out. But it wasn't like an egregious pick when it happened. It was just kind of a blah pick when it happened, and he was kind of a blah player for the Bulls, so I gave it a C.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with a C minus here. You think about what the Bulls netted for him in a trade, too, a couple years later, and kind of giving up on the same way that we've talked about on a couple other prospects.
I mean, that's hindsight, though. That's not the draft itself.
All right, so if they're taking Tony Snell here, I think with the connections, too, that made a lot of sense that the Bulls liked this guy because he played at New Mexico. There was the connections there as well. Look, this 2013 draft was pretty garbage. Outside of guys like Giannis and Victor Oladipo, think about where Cody Zeller went. He went number 2 overall in this draft. So if you keep that in mind about the 2013 draft, I don't think it was such a terrible pick. You look at other guys that went in the lottery, Trey Burke and Ben McLemore and Nerlens Noel. But Rudy Gobert actually went at number 26 behind the Bulls. Bulls passed up on him too as well. So that's another factor as well. I think I'm going to give him a C minus for Tony Snell because, like you said, he didn't turn out to be exactly the player that we thought he was going to. So let's go to 2014. This is another one where I have to grade.
This is my third F.
This is where I have to grade an F, too.
Yeah, this is my third F after Tyrus Thomas and Marquise Teague. This is my third F because they traded up to get Doug. Doug didn't pan out, and the guys they missed out on are two pretty good NBA players in Yusuf Nurkic and Gary Harris. That's this one and Teague are the ones that younger Bulls fans love to harp on, and rightfully so. It was a terrible move.
Yeah, Yusuf Nurkic, going into free agency this year, I think is going to command a lot of money, and the Denver Nuggets ended up with a phenomenal pick in that. And then Gary Harris too. I think there was a lot of doubt about Gary Harris's game going out of Michigan State. He's turned into be a stud as well. Doug McDermott being their 4-year guy, the connections there as well. Being the all-time scorer coming out of college, I think there was hope that Doug McDermott's game would translate. It just didn't, and he's had multiple opportunities with different teams, the Knicks and now the Dallas Mavericks. It just doesn't look like it's going to work out for Doug McDermott. So I'm also giving him an F there in 2014.
All right.
2015.
Bobby Portis, I'm giving him a solid B+. I mean, not quite as much of a steal as Taj at 26 at this point. If we're talking about scrappy front court guys who start off as bench players, maybe someday they become a starter. But, I mean, people didn't think that Bobby was going to fall to 22. He was an SEC player of the year, for crying out loud. Nobody thought the Bulls were going to take him because everybody thought the Bulls were going to look to take their next point guard as they were getting ready to get rid of Derrick Rose. But Bobby was there at 22. And right now, especially after the season he just had, it looks like Bobby at 22 was some pretty darn good value. So I give him a B+.
I'm with you there. I think B+, A- is a borderline. You can go back and forth, especially the season that he had this year. You think about the players that were picked ahead of him as well. Rashid Vaughn, Sam Decker, Jerian Grant, DeLon Wright, and Justin Anderson. All guys that were picked in the 2015 draft ahead of Bobby Portis too. I think this sort of the only reason why I'm not giving them a complete A for this pick is because he sort of fell to the Bulls, and the Bulls didn't really have a scenario in which they needed to pick between some guys. But you look at the guys that were taken ahead of him, and all of the five of those guys, Bobby Portis is arguably better than them right now. So I think I'm going to give them a B+, A-, kind of be on the border there, depending on which way you want to argue. So going to 2016. Denzel Valentine at number 14. What? I'm curious to hear what your thoughts and your grade is on this one.
To me, that's just a flat C. You know, hopefully he turns into a solid role player and a bench guy. I'm still not convinced about his longevity in the NBA as an effective role player. This past season was certainly a step up from his awful rookie season, but to me right now, that's a C.
I think I'm right there with you. It's an average pick. It's a classic Bulls pick. It's a guy that dominated in the Big Ten, was one of the best players in the Big Ten when he came out. You look at all the competitiveness that came with his game. The basketball IQ everybody talked about as being really high. Being at the back half of the lottery, it's guys that you take gambles on or a sure bet, and the Bulls tried to take the most sure bet here at number 14 with Valentine. At that point and where his career is at right now, I think I would give it a C as well. Not excited about it, but I wasn't disappointed with the pick either. I still think Denzel Valentine can maybe be a productive role player off the bench for a team that's trying to be competitive, but we'll see. So I think I'm right there with you at C. And then that brings us to last year's draft at number 7, Lauri Markkanen. I'm giving an A+ here.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could tack off the plus and maybe make it an A- if you're a salty Garpax hater. Well, they didn't even scout him. Well, yeah, because they weren't really planning on picking in the top 10 now, were they? If that's the argument you want to make, maybe it's an A or an A- instead of an A+ just because you're a pessimist and you can't find joy in anything. But I'm going to go the other way, and I'm going to agree with you and say, based on the rookie season that we just watched, you got to give that an A+. Based on the fact that if you were to redo that 2017 draft today, it would probably go Donovan Mitchell and then Jason Tatum and then Lauri Markkanen as probably the number 3 pick. That's an A. That's an A+. If you want to be salty and say, "Well, they didn't scout him," then that's your right. But to me, you look at what Markkanen's rookie year was and what he can become. That's another A.
Yeah, I think the gamble that they took on him at number 7 and the scrutiny that the Bulls got for taking him there and all the people on Twitter that overreacted on draft night saying he's going to be horrible.
I loved the pick when they made it on draft night. I didn't know what people were talking about who thought it was a terrible pick.
I think that's why it makes you and I a little bit, I don't know, I feel a little bit smarter because we didn't completely overreact to the pick at number 7. And I felt like I was in the camp of a few people that I felt like the Bulls changing direction here in 2017 and trading Jimmy Butler, I felt like they got two great assets back in terms of potential in Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine, and then they turned around and took Lauri Markkanen. I was excited about him too, and I didn't think the comparisons to Nico Mirotic and taking any international player was really fair to Lauri Markkanen. People that said he wasn't going to be able to play defense, that his feet were too slow, obviously got proved wrong this year. And the three-point shot, I think, has been better than we all thought he was going to be coming into the first year. So I'm giving him an A+ just for the gamble and then ultimately hitting in the first year. And we'll see whether or not that pans out to be true. But everything that we know about Lauri Markkanen so far tells me that this guy's going to be here for a long time and could potentially be an all-star.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that we've made our way all the way through from 2003 to 2017. And I mean, just looking back on this, I just want to say real quick. So you and I weren't that different on most of our grades, you know, a plus here, a minus there. But so I added them up. I have, since 2003, when Paxson took over as the head of this Bulls front office, 6 A's, 2 B's, 2 C's, 1 D, and 3 F's. And so I'm sorry, but those of you who were like eating Cheerios in your high chair when the Bulls were taking Kirk Heinrich in 2003 that are constantly on Twitter saying, "Fire Garpax, this front office is garbage." Put yourself in the shoes of the Reinsdorf family and look at the longevity of what they have done in the draft. And those of you who say that the Bulls can't draft don't know what you're talking about. Yes, there was that ugly little spurt there between Marquise Teague, Tony Snell, and Doug McDermott. That 2012 to 14 range was really rough. But even still, they've kind of started to correct that curve with Bobby, Denzel, not so much, but Bobby and Lowry, 2 out of 3 in the last 3 years, and most everything dating back to before the ugly 2012 to 2014 swing was good. Was like them hitting and hitting and hitting on pick after pick after pick, especially in the back end of the first round. So for all of you youngins who just constantly scream fire guard packs, they don't know how to draft, educate yourself. For those of you who still wonder how this front office is still employed, educate yourself. We just went through 12, 13, 14, however many years it is of collective draft picks. Most of it's A's and B's. Yeah, there were a few ugly ones in the bunch. Mostly A's and B's. Just think about that for a second. And now I'm done doing my Garpax devil's advocate spiel. Thank you very much.
The one thing I will say before we get out of here, too, is I think for the most part, you're right. If you want to trash the organization for not being able to get free agents and to tie them to Chicago and try to really build a finals team here, sure, okay, that's fine. And I'm with you there, too. The Bulls have swung and missed on the way that they're able to draw free agents in. Great. That's the way that they've run this organization and the way they've treated players and some of the star players who have left after some of the things that they've said about the front office. Sure, you're right. They've been critical and they've had criticisms of this team. So you can use that too in the case of being mad at the front office. But I think you're right, Matt, here, as we've gone through the last 15 years of the draft, and I was arguing with you a few weeks ago about whether or not the Bulls have had a decent last 5 years of this draft. And I think that we've said that there's more A's and B's than there are C's through F's. So in that facet, I think the Bulls do have a decent idea of who they want to draft. And now getting more towards the last 3 years and Valentine, Portis, and now Markkanen, I think those three players are pretty solid players to take, especially where you're considering where they were drafting 22, 14, and 7. It's three different parts of the draft in 3 different years, and they've all been pretty quality picks. And you look at Markkanen, he could potentially be a superstar. So I think I'm with you. If you want to yell about the front office mismanaging things and taking money for second-round picks and the way that Gar Forman would come out and back some of these guys that they did, like Cristiano Felicio signing him to a deal or saying that they're super high on Paul Zipser, I get all those criticisms as well. So you can use that argument, but I don't think it really pertains to the draft essentially, that you want to come out and say that, you know, all fire guard packs. I get that argument too. So I don't think it's a strong argument if you're using that in a basis to try and get the front office fired, because overall it seems like they've done a pretty solid job at drafting and developing players, but it didn't ultimately get you to an NBA Finals championship, and partly that fault goes to LeBron James. And look, no other organization in the East was getting past LeBron James over the last decade, so you got to take that into account as well.
Yeah, and that's a good clarification to make. While I was up there on my preaching pedestal, I was talking specifically about those Garpax haters who think they can't draft and they don't know what they're doing in the draft, because that's just flat out wrong, because we just went through 15 years of draft picks and there is unquestionably more good decisions than bad decisions. And Jordan, you're right. Bulls fans have every right to be upset about the dumb things that Gar Forman said to the media before he was banned from ever speaking to the media ever again by his own organization. You can be upset about not landing marquee names in free agency, and put some of that blame on the front office for not having the right pitch. Some of that's just the players and their decisions. But when it comes to the draft, I mean, you can be bummed out when they do have, and you can be not only bummed out, and you can be critical when they miss. But you can't only be critical when they miss without giving them any credit for when they've hit. And this Paxson regime has hit a lot more than they've missed.
On that note, Bulls fans, we are very excited for tonight's draft. Have no idea exactly what's going to happen, and if the Bulls stay at number 7, stay at number 22, we'll find out later tonight. If you want to leave all of your reaction to tonight's draft or anything that we've talked about over the last few episodes, you can leave that for us at 331-979-1369. That's our text and voicemail line. We want to hear reactions from you guys, instant reactions about who the Bulls might take at number 7, number 22. Any of the conversation you want to be a part of, we're going to play all those voicemails and those questions on tomorrow's episode, so make sure you get those in at 331-979-1369. You can always hit us up on Twitter, too, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. But that's going to about do it for us here on Locked On Bulls.
Oh, wait, Jordan, real quick, before we get out of here, we forgot to do this yesterday. We can't forget to do it again today. The winner of the Dennis Rodman autographed photo giveaway, Alex from Oak Brook. Congratulations, Alex. Thank you to everyone who participated. And we certainly will do another giveaway at some point in the near future. Maybe a giveaway that has to do with whoever the Bulls are taking in the draft tonight. So, again, congrats, Alex. Thanks, everyone, for playing. We'll do another giveaway soon.
So, congratulations to Alex. And like Matt had just said, we're definitely planning on doing a couple more giveaways throughout this summer. So, definitely stay tuned to us on social media. Continue to listen and subscribe here. It's probably going to be the next thing that we do, is surrounded around one of these two draft picks that the Bulls decide on tonight. So get excited for that. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, we are out, Bulls Nation. Enjoy tonight's NBA draft. We're just as excited as you guys. Remember, interact with us at the show. Text or voicemails, or hit us up on Twitter as well. We'll be very active there tonight. So stay tuned on social media and be subscribed to the show, because we will have a brand new episode tomorrow morning for you with all the reaction from the draft night tonight, as well as so much more. So for Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.